Hello and welcome to a mini episode of the Red Hoods. Schedules and stuff like that didn't really work out this week, so there's no full episode of the Red Hoods this week. There will be next week. But I thought I'll give a little mini episode. I'll give you a thought on a couple of films I watched over the last couple of weeks that I might not get a chance to get around to in the next episode anyway. I'll skip the whole hour of waffly bullshit chat beforehand, because that would be quite a depressing podcast, just to hear me talking to myself for an hour. Hey Sean, how are you? Lonely. I had a bowl of cereal earlier, milk was gone off, so I just had to eat it dry. Put it down on the floor next to the cat's food and just ate it like a cat. Which was nice. I suppose it's about time we played the trivia game. I'm thinking of a movie. Is it No Country for Old Men? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, no, I think it would pretty much be the saddest thing you'd ever. This could be the saddest thing I've ever actually done. And this is coming from someone who's masturbated to video game characters. So, Qbert, if you're wondering. And Miss Pac-Man. But and just a small bit of housekeeping before I kind of crack into my small little mini reviews. Ross Brown from RTE's The Fear, he's doing a tour of kind of the Munster area in December, January, February, and I think March of this year, or next year. This year and next year, December, January. Yeah, you know how months work, and the cats are fighting, so it's good. So they're obviously quite depressed as well. Sorry, hey cats, stop. So Ross is doing a tour, and I'm going to be supporting him on a number of dates, which is great. I'm really looking forward to it. That's great. A couple of the dates I have here, some of them I don't have the venue name yet, but I'll update them as I know them anyway. But it's part of his Ross Brown's Professional Idiot Tour. Will be in City Limits in Cork on December the 12th. It will be in Carrigtool on December the 21st. In Ballincollig on February the 6th. Castletown Bear on February the 8th. And January the 16th. Which should have gone before February, in fairness. I know how time works. In Maliquibo in Mallow. They're all the dates I've been confirmed for already. I'm sure Ross has added more dates as he gets them, but it's great. It's going to be Ross doing an hour and a half full show, so it's going to be great. Ross the resident MC in City Limits and star of RTE's The Fear. Great comedian, one of my favourites in Ireland. And I know I say that a lot about a lot of comedians, but I genuinely mean it about Ross. So I'm really looking forward to those gigs. It'll be a nice end to 2014 and start to 2015. So that's pretty much housekeeping done. I'll just remind you as well to subscribe and give us a review on iTunes if you get a chance, like our page on Facebook, and if you'd like to email the podcast, which at the moment is just me, you can email us at theredhoodspodcast@gmail.com. follow me on Twitter at @TheSeanCullen, the podcast at @TheRedHoodsPod, and I think that's pretty much it. For more information on anything, I'll be adding those dates and stuff on my website, www.theseancullen.com. So with that, I suppose I'll just go on to a couple of movies I watched over the last couple of weeks. I watched a few watched movies and TV shows and played a couple of bit of video games, but not a huge amount. But the one movie I really liked, and I probably wouldn't have got around to talk about next week, so I'm going to see Interstellar tonight, so I imagine that'll be taking up most of my chat on when we record the next pod. But the one movie I did see was Chef. It's the new film, or the latest film, written and directed by Jon Favreau, starring Jon Favreau, Scarlett Johansson, John Leguizamo, Robert Downey Jr. pops up, Sofia Vergara, and it's the story of a chef, a very good chef, who's played by Jon Favreau, who is working in a restaurant, gets a bad review, shit goes bad, so he decides to start a food truck business. And it follows him taking his son and his buddy driving from Florida back to LA, trying to get the food truck up and going. And it's a really, really, really nice film. It's, I don't know, I just had a kind of a smile on my face. Maybe it's because one of the other movies I talked about, I'll talk about Nightcrawler, was such a bleak, dim view of humanity and stuff like that, that it was nice to have a light, nice film where it's not, it's very by the numbers A to B kind of story. There's no big, massive hurdles for them to overcome and stuff like that, which I actually appreciated in it, that it was just the story of a guy just slowly building and building and building and building and trying to get something going. And the main thrust of the whole film really is his relationship with his son. He's divorced, has a good enough relationship with his ex-wife, an interesting relationship. It's kind of relationship with an ex-wife I haven't really seen in many films, which I liked. I thought, you know, that they're still quite friendly and stuff like that. And she's kind of, there's a, the way her character's written and performed and stuff like that, that it could have been a very kind of throwaway role and stuff like that, because she's not in the film much, but Sophie Vergara plays his wife. But it's just, it has this, I don't know, there's this real nice feeling to though. I know I keep saying nice, but it was a nice film. That I just really liked the characters. I just enjoyed spending my time with them. I loved the shots of food being cooked and prepared and everything. It's just, make sure you eat before you watch it, because it's, you will be starving watching otherwise, but it's just the way the food cooking and everything is shot is just so nice, and the sound and everything is just, it made me want to open my own food truck, which is, I think, a pretty big compliment for it. That it's well acted, well written, well directed. It's just a really, really solid, like, 7.5 out of 10 movie. It's not going to change the world or anything like that, but it, and it's not hilarious. There's not really any kind of laugh out loud moments, but there's just a feeling of just kind of smiling and kind of chuckling here and there, or, you know, along to a couple of scenes, a couple of moments here and there and stuff. But it's just a very enjoyable way to spend an hour and a half or however long it is. I recommend it, with the caveat that it's kind of, know what you're going in to watch, that it's kind of a, it's not too schmaltzy. I'm actually impressed, like, there is schmaltzy moments in it, but the way they're played, and I think it's the way Jon Favreau either directs and performs it and stuff like that, that they don't seem to lean too heavily into it. Like, I kind of let it slide. I kind of didn't roll my eyes, and so I just kind of smiled, and I was like, I thought they were just kind of really kind of nicely played moments here and there with this, as his relationship with the son builds up and stuff like that as well. I think it's, no, it's well worth watching. That's Chef by Jon Favreau. That's good. And the other film, well, a couple of weeks back, myself and Neil went to see Psycho live in the Cork Opera House. The RT Concert Rockstar performing the score of Psycho live alongside the film, which was great, and we'll talk about it in the pod. But after watching that, I went on a bit of a psycho tear. Not literally. I didn't kill people. Not in the last 2 weeks, anyway. But I watched Psycho 2 when I got back that night, because I'd never seen it. Neil had described a scene in it that I kind of wanted to see and stuff like that. And I was surprised that it's not terrible. It's not brilliant. It's not, I wouldn't even necessarily say it's good, but it's a lot better than it has any right to be. I thought it was interesting. It was directed by Richard Franklin, by Tom Holland. Stars Anthony Perkins. He's played Norman Bates. It was made in 1983, so he's playing Norman after 22 years of being in the psychiatric hospital. He gets released back to the house in the motel, and he gets a job in a diner and befriends a girl there and stuff. But it's really interesting in that there's an ambiguity, well, a slight ambiguity, but Norman isn't killing people this time around. It's people who don't trust him. The sister from the sister, Marion's sister from the first film, is on a tear trying to convince the authorities, everyone, that Norman is still insane and he's going to kill again and blah, 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 and all this stuff. So there's all this distrust around Norman and stuff like that, except for the girl he befriends in the diner and stuff. But what's kind of really interesting, it's instead of having him doing the kind of Friday the 13th, it's like, oh, Norman does it again, he's going crazy, he's killing everyone, blah, 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 and all this. It's kind of actually dealing with the, like, can he be rehabilitated? And it's kind of just the way, I think it's just partly Anthony Perkins' performance is quite interesting, just seeing him struggling with trying to hold on to his sense of reality and stuff like that, and trying to stay stable while still living in the house and working in the motel and stuff like that as well. It's kind of, it's got little moments here or there that are quite effective. It goes too leans too far into the kind of slasher movie type side for some of the murders, that you're not sure whether it's, but you're pretty sure it's not Norman committing them, doing stuff like that. But it's as a curiosity, it's kind of worth watching. A couple of nice shots, a couple of nice moments, a couple of good performances, a couple of absolutely eye-rolling moments and ridiculous moments here and there. The end is, like, the ending sequence is quite good, but really hacky in some parts, and then they kind of mess about with the character a bit in the last couple of minutes. That isn't exactly the best way of doing it, but I thought it was interesting. And the other thing that I watched, I watched season one of Bates Motel, which is the TV series, executive produced by Carlton Cuse. And, oh no, sorry, well, yeah, executive produced and created by Anthony Cipriano, who I'm not sure actually what else he's done. I'll just check the IMDb. Oh, not much. So the show, it's kind of a prequel to Psycho. The original Psycho, where it's following Norman and the mother as they buy the motel and do it up and blah, 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 and all that. But it's set in the present day, so it's not a direct prequel, I think, to the, yeah, well, obviously not to the original, unless that's the big twist at the end of season two, that they invented time machine. But it's quite good. Freddie Highmore plays Norman Bates, who, and his performance is a bit off at first, but as the series goes on, I kind of see what he's doing with it, and I actually quite like his performance in it. But the standout really is Vera Farmiga as Norma Bates, his mother. She gives this really kind of unhinged, because the show, it's really, like, in some places, is absolutely terrible. It's, like, really, really bad. Some of the writing is atrocious in some parts, but in terms of a schlocky kind of TV series, it's just like kind of like chewing gum that, you know, it's not giving you anything. Like the father said, quote, chewing gum for the eyes, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. It's kind of, it's very watchable. I don't know what it is about it. Some of the episodes drag like a fucker, but it's something, it still manages to stay watchable. And I think a lot of it is down to Vera Farmiga's performance. She's excellent as Norma, and she manages to take some of the kind of more egregious lines. And just because she sells them, not necessarily with conviction, but she seems to, tonally, she's like, as the tone of the show is really inconsistent in places. It's crazy. Like, they're trying to be this kind of almost serious psychological thriller in some parts, and then there's ridiculous plot lines with sex slave rings, and like everybody in the town, it seems that their hobby is covering up murders. It's where the amount of people who get involved in covering up murders is kind of ridiculous and over the top, and so there's really weird tone and balance over the whole show. And Vera Farmiga seems to be the only one who's actually manages to stay on both sides at simultaneously, and manages to, I don't know, she seems to be having fun with the role. And it's ridiculousness and stuff like that as well. So it's not, I don't necessarily recommend watching it. Maybe watch the first couple of episodes and see if, like, if it doesn't irritate you too much, then yeah, it's worth giving it a chance. I think if you're really stuck for something to watch, I mean, there's so many better TV shows out there. I mean, I don't need to say Hannibal. Obviously, if you have watched Hannibal, pick Hannibal over Bates Motel for a show that does a prequel to a famous psychotic character. Hannibal's definitely the one to go to. But if you've watched Hannibal, you've watched everything else. Well, not everything else, but if you've watched a lot, you're stuck for something, you're kind of curious about it. It's kind of worth watching. It's very schlocky. But I think that's slightly in keeping with the original film as well. Like, Hitchcock set out to make a really well-made B movie, so this leans much more heavily into the kind of B movie side of things than the actual Psycho did, because just because the nature of it, Hitchcock managed to elevate it up a bit, a level as well. Kind of created a whole genre in himself, but it's all right. It's an interesting curiosity. So yeah, that was the two. Those were the big movie I saw and absolutely loved. But we'll talk a lot on the next podcast about. But I just want to talk a small bit about it. Is Nightcrawler, the new film written and directed by Dan Gilroy, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Rene Russo, and if you heard the click. That's my memory just clicking in. Bill Paxton and... Oh, what's his name? Yeah, well, Bill Paxton's running a small role in it. Sorry, now I'm leaving a big pause. I'm be fucked if I'm going to edit this because I'm recording late and have to get it up fast. It was the guy from Four Lions. Riz Ahmed, that's it. Yeah, from Four Lions. He was in Four Lions previously. And... I think the Reluctant Fundamentalist, but it's basically the plot of it is Lou Bloom, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, is kind of a petty thief. He's kind of, you know, stealing copper wire, metal fencing and stuff like that, selling it, pawning it off and stuff like that, because money that way. Complete opportunist. He happens across a car accident one night and sees Bill Paxton and his buddy or his work colleague, whatever the hell they are, pulling up in a van, rushing out and filming the accident. And he informs them that they're selling the footage of the accident to the morning news the next morning. So basically, the film charts Lou Bloom, his rise through, not the ranks necessarily, but his rise through the ranks of, I suppose, just pure inhumanity, as he gets a camera himself and starts filming accidents and then gets involved. Finds he's quite good at it because he's got absolutely no compunctions and no, he's unfettered by conscience. So his footage tends to, he doesn't accept personal or societal boundaries at all, doesn't even see them, just walks clean past them. So he starts recording footage that gets the attention of Rene Russo, who runs the lowest ranking local news station in LA. At the time, or at the time, it's not a documentary, I hope. Well, it kind of is. And it's just this watching the whole, not him spiral, but just seeing the limit, the how far he pushes every boundary. Well, I push it how fast he just smashes through and fucking without a second thought, all these boundaries. It's an absolutely fantastic film. I absolutely loved it. I loved every second of it. Jake Gyllenhaal's performance is absolutely incredible. He manages to make Lou Bloom, who's a completely reprehensible character, he manages to give him these moments where he's got this offbeat charm to him. It's like it plays as a very nail on the head kind of satire on media, but I was listening to a couple of podcasts and stuff, and I think it was on the Filmcast, /Filmcast. It raises an interesting point that it's actually more of a satire on capitalism, because Lou is kind of a character who he's taken all these kind of, he says, there's a quote in the film even, he says he was raised in the self-esteem kind of school system, but he takes all these kind of mindfulness kind of mantras and business mantras, and he's learned everything from the internet, he's self kind of taught everything, and he takes these mantras and these kind of affirmation things that, like the thing with mindfulness and stuff, you know, when it comes to all those mantras and stuff, there's an implied kind of like, yeah, of course you have to care about other people and like whatever you're doing, you do it without fucking over other people and stuff like that. Whereas what Nightcrawler does is shows what happens when a sociopath gets his hands on those mantras and believes in them fully and acts on them absolutely at a very base level, how absolutely terrifying that is. It's a kind of film that it makes your skin crawls, no pun intended, makes you weep for kind of the state of humanity and stuff like that, but without managing to be too heavy. There's kind of a sorry, phone rang, got interrupted. It's like, I don't know, it's not that heavy. It's not like it's very similar. I thought it was being all original when I walked out the film, saying he really reminds me of kind of a cross between Rupert Pupkin in Martin Scorsese's The King comedy and another De Niro character, Taxi Driver, obviously, Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver, another Scorsese film. And I don't know what it is, whatever it is, I think it's very I think like King of Comedy, it's not crushingly depressing as it could be, as it sounds, because there's this energy to the film, and there's this weird, like, what he's doing is completely reprehensible, but there's this weird part of you that I found myself berating myself for kind of half liking him in some scenes, because you have to almost admire the sheer balls on him that completely unfettered kind of determination to succeed. And because he's a complete sociopath and isn't aware of other people, he's just it's a satire on, like, that was the same, the film cast, it's a satire on capitalism and the American, it's like the most warped version of the American dream. It's he's a guy who starts out with nothing and just slowly builds himself up, builds himself up, builds himself up. And it's just relentless pursuit to succeed as a businessman. And he, like, he introduced, you know, the second he starts getting the camera, he says he's founded a TV news production company, and he's got all these business mantras and stuff like that. And it is, he's a self-made guy, and that partly makes, I don't know what it is. It's got a, yeah, it's a strange one. I can't put my finger, I can't get the film out of my head. I loved it. Absolutely, Jake Gyllenhaal's performance, as I said, it's absolutely incredible. I really hope he gets awards recognition for it. I know awards aren't the be all and the end all, but I'd like to see him get awards because it's a phenomenal performance, and I think it's the kind of performance that you wouldn't realize how good it is until you saw someone else trying it. And he's like, he said he lost like 30 pounds because he wants to see him hungry. He was kind of modeling himself on a coyote, kind of like the Nighttime LA kind of feel, and he's got these big bulging eyes and he never blinks. So echoes of Anthony Hopkins' Lecter there in it, and it's just an incredible performance in this. Cat's gone mental. And I was very impressed with Dan Gilroy's direction, because it's his first time directing. He's written a couple of pretty bad movies. Free Jack in 1992 was one of his. I think Anthony Hopkins was in that. Terrible movie. But it's got this kind of Michael Mann feel. They shot LA at night digitally, and it looks stunning. It's a real love letter to LA. It was kind of, it just made me want to go back there again. Name dropping LA, I was in LA, yeah. Stuff, but it's just so well shot. All the stuff in the car, like, there's a lot of it set in the car as he's driving to and from accidents and stuff like that. But it's just so well, it was shot by Robert Elstress, who they used. Bar the Master has shot every one of Paul Thomas Anderson's films and won the Oscar for There Will Be Blood, and it's just an absolutely stunning film as well. It's just so atmospheric. It's just an excellent film. It's so good. I was so impressed by it, and kind of I hadn't really heard anything about it. I saw the teaser a few months back, the brilliant teaser for it, and then kind of had slightly forgotten about it, and then it just popped up and just blew me away. I got a very similar feeling walking out of it as I did walking out of Drive, and Drive was one of my favorite movies, if not my favorite movie that year. The year it came out, I think 2012. So it's that kind of neon noir kind of style film, but excellent. I really can't recommend seeing it highly enough. It's definitely going to appear on my list of favorite films of the year. How high up is kind of? It's going to be high up there anyway as well. I'm gonna catch it again before I leave the cinema, because it's a fantastic film. More entertaining than it should be, because it shouldn't. This kind of film is so bleak. It shouldn't be as entertaining as it is, but you can't. It's the same thing. It's why you, like, he's not. The thing about it with it is he wouldn't be able to do all these reprehensible things if there wasn't the appetite from the news company, and then feeding on from that, the news company would be doing it if there wasn't an appetite from the viewing public and stuff like that. So, like, as he's kind of going around the scene, and you get caught up in the film, and you get caught up in the voyeuristic nature of what he's doing, and like, oh my God, isn't that awful? But you don't walk away, you don't look away, you don't walk out of the film. You keep watching because you want to see how far he's going to go next, and that's exactly what it's a whole satire on. It's our voyeuristic kind of nature as well. Excellent film, really, really well worth watching. Can't recommend it highly enough. That's Nightcrawler. Just go and see it. So that's it. That's probably it. This is for the mini episode of the pod. recording the real episode 30 in the next few days. I'm going to see Interstellar tonight, so I'll talk about that. Steph and Neil will discuss Nightcrawler a bit more. Also, Psycho Live, and I've rented but haven't watched yet. Begin Again, the Mark Ruffalo Keira Knightley film. From the director of Once, I can't remember anyway. But anyway, that's it for this mini episode of The Red Hood. So I've been Sean Colin. Until next time.